6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, and of course all you self-appointed leaders of the collective we. Good morning to you, those who use the word we in emails. Man, nothing pisses me off more than that. Let me tell you something, Kalo. I get an email that says, I've got some criticism about your show, and we're uncomfortable with it. Who the hell uses that word, we're, Mark Riley? What kind
of the people? Oh,
cowardly, bullying, sort of in-the-dark crap is that? What we are you talking about?
It's the oldest trick in the book, man. What? Everybody in radio, no one who writes or calls or emails a radio station will admit to speaking only for themselves. There's got to be a constituency. Otherwise, why would you pay attention?
I guess that's it. To me, it's just sort of some weird device. It's a bullying device, and it's one that liberals are prone to using. And I'm saying liberals with love. I am, you know.
Is that
I mean?
A small L or a capital L?
Well, no, I mean, it's just like, you know, if you're going to be sitting there, you know, in the dark, writing off a missive to a radio station that you probably think isn't going to read it, you know, I mean, why not just say, I disagree with this. I think you're wrong. I was uncomfortable with this. Not we're like, you know, there's really a lot of us. I'm speaking for the whole country, so you should really change your behavior because we're uncomfortable with it.
Well, you know, changing a radio host's behavior is the embodiment of the impossible dream for listeners, okay? There's no way in the world that a radio station goes, whoa, you and 20 people said something? Oh, I guess that means I have to change.
Well, obviously, I'll certainly entertain the idea, but I've had this, not the idea of changing, but entertain, you know, the notion of getting that type of email. I'm not going to read it yet. I'm not going to read it.
Go ahead, read it, man.
Do we want to do it now or we want to wait on it?
No, we'll wait a little while. Make sure they're all up, all 150 of them.
Yeah. No, it's the entire country, Riley.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, yes. It's not just 150 people or 20 people. It's there's probably millions that believe like this one person speaking for the collective we.
Now, but we should let the audience know, before you read this.
I'm going to read it later.
Yeah, you're going to read it later. But, I mean, this is about, you know, folks dealing with the personal.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong. People deal with the personal all the time. You know, just because Rush Limbaugh doesn't do it, his personal life is apparently such a shambles that he doesn't want to talk about it on the radio.
Well,
that's okay.
I guess now we got to do it. Because you know, it's like, because...
Come on, bring it.
Well, no, I'm going to probably do it again
bring
in the
it.
Seven. But, here, you know, I get the... And, like, you know, we've got things to talk about. But, you know, this it's funny to me because yesterday I was in a little bit of a crisis because of, you know, I was having some trouble with my wife and the long distancing. And, I talk about it because this is what I do. This is the forum here.
That's
nothing wrong
with that.
No, I know that. And it's like, you know, this is a variety show. We cover a lot of topics. We cover personal stuff. We cover entertainment stuff. We cover politics.
We cover everything.
Yes, we are a morning show.
We drew the line, however, at Brad Pitt and Jennifer Aniston. We didn't cover that.
Yeah, well, you know, speaking of that, and that's right, because Chris asked me yesterday, you were like Angelina Jolie, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like,
yeah.
But I don't, you know, it's weird because my wife likes Angelina Jolie, not in that way per se, but
no,
I don't.
No, she likes her in that way. You
know, well,
doesn't that have something to do with the lips? I mean, isn't she, you know.
But I don't, like, I find her a little skanky.
Okay.
I mean, I just do. I mean, I look at her. I
trollopy sort of way?
Well, no, I can acknowledge that she's beautiful and she's hot or whatnot, but I'm not.
But you think she's easy?
I'm not attracted to her.
Oh.
I don't know if it's easy or what. It's just like, it all seems like a performance. I just couldn't, seeing it not being a show. Which, there's nothing wrong with a show. Chris, give me
what? You talking to him like he's been to a few shows like that?
No, but I mean, I don't know. She's just not my cup of tea, really.
Yeah.
And I guess they were having phone sex or what have you, which is, you know,
allegedly.
It's a transgression. You know, it's not as bad as actually. You know,
is it a transgression? You know, we could do a whole advice Dr. Phil type thing about whether phone sex is in fact a transgression.
We have to worry about the collective we.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Forgive me.
No,
yeah, back to the business at hand.
I think that anything that pollutes your brain from, you know, that creates an element of distrust or guilt in you about your behavior in relation to your spouse, you know, or your significant other, I apologize, you know, is a transgression. You have to sort of negotiate with yourself how many of those you want to collect and tolerate.
Now, does that include, how best to put this, plunking your magic twanger?
Whoa. Hold on a minute.
That's from a real old television show. People who are old in our audience will know that that is actually from a from the Buffalo Bob show.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it includes that. No,
no, okay.
I don't.
So you can do that and be guilt-free.
In some cases. Well, now we're gonna. It's gonna be a full-on, special interest story of our, So here we go, dude. This is the email I got yesterday. Dude, this is a political show, not an advice of a lovelorn column. You don't hear Rush Limbaugh whining about his drug addiction or divorce. No. You know, I personally would love to hear him talk about that.
Me too.
I would love to hear him own his drug addiction on the air, talk about his recovery. I would love to learn more about, you know, how that idiot, you know, ruined his marriage. I think that would be great because then you could really see into the soul of the person. But not interesting to the collective we. Mm-hmm. All right? No, you don't hear them. You know, honestly, I don't hear Rush Limbaugh doing anything because I don't listen to him because I don't care about what he has to say. Now, you hear him whining about the lack of morals in the liberal citizens of this country. Please stick to politics. We're sad that you have marital issues, but you need every precious moment to stir up the troops like the Repugs do. Quit wasting precious time. And here's the one that kills me. This, I dig this, in parentheses, plus, we're not really interested. We're not really interested. Karen. Okay, I'm not even going to say where she lives because she's all worked up about this. Now, I had to write back because I like to. Because like sometimes I go through the emails because I'm sitting after the show and, we're having our post-production meeting and I'll, sort of look through
stuff.
You'll
get bored and you'll start looking at the blog.
I like to, not the blog. These are the emails. The blog's hard to look through because it's, just because it's so long.
Yeah, I know.
So I wrote back to her. I said, what is it with people like you and the word we're? I'll have you know that not only did we get dozens of phone calls about the little relationship problem, but dozens of emails. Yours was actually the only snotty, condescending, hurtful, negative one. It's our show, and there's room for all topics that we decide to cover. Thanks for your input and your assumed position of the spokesperson for the collective we. So, what? Bam! Back! Bam! She comes back. Whoa, touchy. The collective we are the 20 or so of us who used to listen to you in the morning here at work. I love that. She had to stand up and go, hey, can I get a vote here?
Yeah.
You know that radio station we listened to? Well, I had the cojones to go ahead and send a letter off into the dark thinking that it would just be processed by somebody, and this guy responded. So I think we should all get together and not listen to him because he's got problems.
Yeah.
What an idiot. All right, so here we go. Touchy. After, let me ask you a question. Touchy. Would you be touchy? Plus, we're not really interested. Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. I shouldn't take that personally in any way. All right, anyways. See, now it's getting crazy.
It's business, not personal.
Right. Now that we know that you can't take a joke. Whoa, did you hear a joke in that first one? I'm just curious. Did you hear a joke? Maybe you don't know how to write a joke. All right, now that we know that you can't take a joke, we're taking the wasting something more seriously and realizing that, yes, you are wasting airtime on personal issues. It's not wasting airtime. It's entertaining sometimes.
Sometimes, yes.
Our democracy is at stake, Mark Riley.
Is it?
According to the leader of the collective we. The other team is winning for reasons like this. You can't take a joke, belittle your listeners, now ex-listeners in parentheses, and waste their time on personal matters that might be interesting if you didn't take yourself so seriously. Oh, so now there's a condition to whether or not it would be interesting. Apparently, it was an element.
So in other words, if you made jokes about what happened, then it would be okay.
Ah, we think we might have solved your marital problem. We think, and took the issues more seriously, like using the end of the show to complain that there's too much coverage of the tsunami disaster. I know I keep saying the T4. The tsunami disaster. Would you have complained about too much coverage of 9/11 if you'd been on the air then? So now she confuses issues because she's worked up. Her fragile little ego.
Did we
ego.
Say something about too much coverage of the tsunami?
No, we were talking to Jeff Jarvis about, at what point does it become too much?
Yeah.
When do you start neglecting
other
news stories?
So we were asking a question, not making a statement.
Yeah, well, it's just she's just all riled up.
Oh.
But not to worry. We are only 20-some. We're happy to defer to the dozens of people who call and weren't dumped on in return. Whoa, dude, woman, whoever you are,
dude.
You wrote a letter dumping on us, and now it's like all of a sudden you're the victim? This is tremendous. You're a real piece of work. In the meantime, we'll be happy to go back to listening to PBS in the morning. Now, what's interesting about that is PBS is a TV channel, and I'm just going to go
over. So maybe she listens to PBS with the sound off.
Well, we'll go over the PBS schedule for this morning and see what she's chosen to listen to. We'll be back at 16 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Just to wake you up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
20 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We're in the middle of the big Morning Sedition farewell to Karen in Boston, who, you know, along with 20 of her, I assumed were coworkers initially, but now I'm not so sure. She is, registered her complaint with me that, talking about my personal life and about, my true marriage sort of issues around long distance care was just a waste of airtime. And she and her 20 coworkers were completely uninterested, and they had a meeting apparently yesterday as to decide to listen to PBS. And PBS is, of course, a television station, which I'm assuming they're listening to without this, the sound. So over our show, they have chosen to tune into Barney and Friends at 6.
I love you.
We got Clifford the Big Red Dog at 7. We got Arthur at 7:30, 8 o'clock Dragon Tales, and 8:30 Sesame Street. So I'm starting to realize that the collective we she's speaking to are apparently nursery school children who shouldn't really be listening to our show anyway. So, Karen, I appreciate that you are turning our show off, because I don't think it's right to have kids listen to us. But I'm glad that you seek their support in making political decisions with your life, because that's important. And the letter I wrote back, finally, in part of the farewell, was great. Thanks for listening. Maybe we'll address our little exchange here on the air, which we did, of course. It's a radio show. When you write to a radio show, you kind of expect that, I would think. Mm-hmm. It's always good to get listener feedback out there, especially the self-righteous who think they can just blast the emails out into the dark and not get a reaction. By all means, as far as democracy is concerned, this is in relation to our discussion with Jeff Jarvis along the lines of how long does tsunami coverage go on for. As far as democracy is concerned, tsunami round the clock for as long as possible is much more important than Iraq, Social Security, tort reform. And as long as your heart and mind are in the right place, you're truly enlightened. Thanks again for listening as long as you did. It's good to know there are people out there willing to jump ship immediately because they disagree with something that happened for 20 minutes. Those are exactly the type of people that make a political party hum. Again, big Morning Sedition farewell to Karen and her nursery school class. Enjoy Barney. And thanks for listening. And if you're not listening now, but I have judging by how much you were festering, I really find it difficult that you wouldn't be listening. And you know what? I might even cover this again in the 7 and give out your name and address. Anyways, the Mark Riley, this is a good transition into, why the Democratic Party is so fragmented, because everybody has their own idea of what needs to happen. And it looks like, obviously today, the news is that Howard Dean is stepping up, and he's announced that he will be a candidate for the Democratic chair, yeah?
Yeah, and it means that those who oppose him, and there are many, are now going to work to undermine him the same way they worked to undermine him when he was running for president. There
right.
is a segment of the Democratic Party, centrists to be exact, blue dogs if you want to use the vernacular, that really don't think that Howard Dean can do anything for this party except drag it into the mud. Now, the problem is, the party is right now the equivalent of one of those little kids who's flailing around while, the big kid holds his head. And he can't hit him because
right.
his arms aren't long enough. That's what the Republicans are, the big kid. The Democrats are the little kid.
But what is the issue here? Because I don't even think the little kid is flailing around. I mean, there's some talk here out of Howard Ickes.
Ickes.
Sorry. I should really know these things. Like, I got another email yesterday criticizing my inability to get people's names right.
Oh, yeah. Specifically.
But he was very specific about African-American names. Said I had a problem with Armstrong Williams because something in my head was confusing Sherwood Williams Paints and Armstrong Floors. And I didn't know which name was first or second. But I have a problem with names in general. Like, I don't even know Kayla's real name. I think it's Chris, but I'm not sure what the last name is. And Clutch. But the thing is,
and they're both honorary African Americans, so you have problems.
Well, the guy had seen that I was subverting some sort of strange prejudice that he had made note. I'd like him to keep a diary if he's got this kind of time in the morning and we're talking about me again. Please make note of every time I forget an African American name so I can see if it's a pattern and it is revealing some inner prejudice. I think it's probably just a selfish, inattentive trait that I have in not really, making mental notes of people's names.
But here's
how to say things properly. Ickes.
Here's what I'm going to do for you, though.
Yeah.
I'm going to write down a list of black names.
Oh, my God. That could help.
And you can read them later and disprove the theory. Yeah, Harold Ickes.
Harold Ickes, you know, who, as I do know what he did, is a former Clinton aide, apparently says that, you know, the Democrats have this horrendous problem with standing up and fighting for themselves. And I'm not sure. He tends to think that it's a matter of dignity, that they think they're above it, or that Kerry was, you know, felt that he was, it was beneath him to take on certain elements in terms of debate, in terms of responding to assaults. And I don't know. What do you think? Is it careerism? Is it self-protection? Is it self-centeredness on behalf of these career politicians? Or do you really think that it's a moral issue with them and they think it's beneath them to sully their image?
Well, I think it goes even deeper than that, Mark, because there is the whole question of the success that the Republicans had in going after the Democrats' quote character unquote, while the Democrats were busy going after the Republicans on issues of policy. And the bottom line is, see, when you're going after somebody on a policy issue, that's supposed to be a civil disagreement. When you go after somebody's character, that's personal. And the Democrats, I think, have always been hesitant to go after the character. I mean, because they go, oh, we got to serve with these people. Well, so what? The Republicans got to serve with you. That doesn't stop them from going after you. You know, remember, Tom Daschle was the leader of the Democrats. Did that stop the Republicans from running somebody that beat him?
I get what you're saying. So that means that we have a double problem here, because the Democrats are not collective in terms of what they feel about policy in any way. They're fragmented. There's this issue of centrism. There's an issue of really honoring the democratic principles of the Democratic Party. And then there are other people that want to move more towards the middle. So if that's the case, if they're just being polite and they only want to talk about policy, well, they're fragmented in policy, too, so they really are a mess.
They would end up being doomed.
Right.
But here is what Democrats ought to be doing. What? They ought to be going after specific goals. First, get rid of Donald Rumsfeld. Get rid of him.
All right.
Period.
All right. Well, we're going to come back and address some of the other issues around centrism, maybe bring Passman in here.
Yeah, let him talk about centrism, because he loves to talk about that. And we got the liberal agenda coming up as well here on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley, Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
There's a little gun club for your R's. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yes, it is.
Morning Sedition. You know, I feel like it feels like Friday, and it's only Tuesday to me.
That's cool.
It's good. The
energy's
good.
That's cool. It's a good feeling.
So Ramon comes in today wearing a dress. What is that about? I mean, how?
Oh, by the way, he wants to be addressed as Ramon.
Okay. That's good. Is that sort of an Israeli slant on it now?
No, man. I'm not saying it's a Latino slant either.
All right, we can go either way on that.
I know.
We don't get any flack. So, yeah, since Bill Clinton has become surprisingly chummy with George W. Bush, Ramon decided apparently to download Clinton's Palm Pilot for the day. 8 a.m., wake up, prepare for a day with W. Note, use Arkansas voice, not Oxford voice. 10 a.m., play video golf with W. Swap, avoid the war stories. Yes, 11 a.m., watch some hoops with the dubster. Gently rib him if he starts trying to eat pretzels. Talk him into South Beach diet. 8 p.m., dinner with the Bushes at the White House. Note, excuse myself to go to the bathroom and check again to see if I cleaned out my secret porn cubby hole. 9 p.m., listen sympathetically as W once again tells me what a mean boss Dick Cheney is. Note, don't bore him with tsunami relief chatter. Ooh. 10 p.m., go home, take a long, scalding hot shower. Why am I showering at night? I'm totally fine with this. That's Bill Clinton. So let's do this, Riley. Let's go over what we have here in terms of who is running for the DNC?
The chairpersonship of the Democratic National.
As we said, Howard Dean, and he was he's the former Vermont governor and presidential candidate. He said he won't use the position as a stepping stone for another presidential run. Dean says Democrats must not try to move to the right to be Republican-like and should instead maintain their core values. Dean is 56 years old. He's a medical doctor. He served a decade as Vermont's chief executive before stepping down in 2002 to run for president.
Mm-hmm.
Martin Frost, a former Texas congressman. Frost served in the House of Representatives from 1978 to 2004. He chose not to run for re-election in 2004. During the 4 years he served as chair of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, covering the 1996 and 1998 election cycles, House Democrats picked up 14 seats.
Yeah, he was chair of the DCCC, which they've they just named a new chair for the House. Howard Dean has not announced yet that he is going to actually make this run, but he is, according to CNN, he has made up his mind that he's going to take
it. He must have woken up and made a phone call to somebody. We got this story right before we got on the air. I just pictured Dean's like, okay, hello, CNN, I'm in.
Yeah.
So this guy you think is the guy, Simon Rosenberg.
Well, Simon Rosenberg is who the centrists will gravitate to. He is, in fact, founder of the New Democratic Network, a centrist business-oriented group. He is young. He's 41 years old. He is a kind of Silicon Valley guy during the Clinton-Gore years. He blasted the Kerry campaign for failing to lure Hispanic voters and said he will make this a priority if he's elected chair of the DNC. And, of course, Bush got 44% of the Latino vote.
Amazing.
He's also pushing for changes to the presidential calendar that would end Iowa and New Hampshire's lock on beginning the process. Tim Romer, and he's a controversial guy, former Indiana congressman, member of the 9/11 Commission, and abortion foe. He is Catholic. He said if he's elected, he would not try to steer the party to the right on abortion. His entry into the race drew some negativity from the head of the Massachusetts Democratic Party, who said, quote, "The fact that we lost the 2004 presidential race by a narrow margin should not result in the abandonment of our party's core principles." Then there's Donnie Fowler, veteran Democratic Party strategist, campaign manager for General Wesley Clark. I don't know what a great recommendation that is. He's 37 years old. He is stressing a return to more state control and how changes in how the party communicates its message. Wellington Webb, African-American former mayor of Denver, believes the party needs a Washington outsider to help them regroup. His problem is with unions. And finally, David Leland, former Ohio Democratic Party chairman. There are two people who are considering, including the only woman who is even being talked about anymore, and that's Kate Michelman, who is the former president of Narrow Pro-Choice America, that group that advocates for legalized abortion, and she's going to decide later this week. Donna Brazile's name was involved for a minute. Alexis Herman's name was involved for a minute. But what's startling about this list, Mark, is that other than Kate Michelman, there are no women contending.
Wellington Webb.
There you go.
I'm just getting that.
There you go. One of our listeners thought Marin had a problem with African American names, or did you just think he didn't know that Wellington Webb was black?
You know, we were talking about Armstrong Williams.
Ah, yes.
And today we talked about Wellington Webb.
Yes.
In the room is Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman of New Jersey. Good morning, Dan Pashman. This is issue that you like to talk about because, you know, you've come in here before and just started sort of seething and screaming about, you know, how the Democratic Party should not move to the center and that there is no center. Can we do that again? Can we talk about that? What does it mean when you say that there is no center, Dan Pashman?
Well, I mean, I feel like it's somewhat paradoxical that everyone's always talking about how divided the country is, and yet you have these people on the left who are saying we need to move to the center. You know, it seems pretty absurd. I don't think that there is a center. And I think, you know, you have some numbers that you've talked about many times, Mark, about the fact that most Americans already agree with Democrats on core issues.
Yeah.
And so there's no need to move anywhere.
Right.
The need is to focus the message and to stand up for the core principles. I don't think we need to move to the left either. But I'm really excited that Howard Dean is officially going to announce today, according to CNN, that he is going to run for DNC chair. And I'll be honest, I was not originally on the Dean bandwagon. I'm not one of the Democrats who was a DEAC, quote unquote. I was opposed to him for the same reason many people were. I didn't think he could win.
Right.
I thought he was too far to the left. But after seeing what happened to John Kerry and seeing how that campaign was run and seeing what happened on November 2nd, now I am fully behind Howard Dean.
But you get the feeling with Dean, you know, whatever you may think of him, that he believes in what he thinks are the Democratic principles. They are the Democratic principles. They are not this move to the center, and he's a guy that can make a case for them. And he's got, you get this feeling with him that he really doesn't have anything to lose on some level, and he believes what he's saying, and that's the kind of mobilizing voice that we need there.
Absolutely, and we just, I just feel like we need someone like Howard Dean. We need someone who can get Democrats excited.
Yes.
You know, there was a great article in the New York Times, I remember, about a month before the election, comparing the crowds at Bush speeches versus the crowds at Kerry speeches. And it just basically said, you know what, the level of adoration that Bush gets from his supporters is mind-boggling. I mean, these people just worship the ground that he walks on. And
because they're simple people.
See there.
Well, we can certainly discuss the reasons why. I'm just saying, like, you know, Dean is someone that I feel like can have a message that we can be proud of. And I'm tired of our Democratic politicians and leaders apologizing for our beliefs.
Well, that's what we and Riley were talking about. It's like, what is really going on is that it's interesting what Riley said is that, you know, they want to attack Republicans on policy. They don't want to get into slander. But the truth of the matter is what we really see is that
slander works.
Right. Well, slander works, but they're not clear on policy. So they're literally leaving themselves without any arsenal.
You're absolutely right. I mean, it's like, you know, to buttress what you said, Riley, I mean, Bill Clinton said before November 2nd, Clinton said, look, as long as negative campaigning continues to work, they're going to continue to do it.
Yep.
Well, and it worked again.
Well, it's very easy. Negative campaigning works because, you know, stupid people like to hate. And if you can give them a little morsel of it, they will lock onto that as opposed to engage in anything that's complicated. I mean, that's why Bush got so much adoration from his people. They have a narrow scope, and he played to the narrow scope, and they just were like, yay! You know, Democrats are like, not yet.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Maybe what's the other side of that? You know, which is there's nothing wrong with that, but we could use a little. Whee!
Right. We need to streamline.
The one guy that actually goes, whee! Everyone's like, he's crazy.
Right. Exactly.
He can't be president. He went, whee!
Right. What's wrong with him?
Yeah.
But I'm curious to ask Riley. I know you had said a few weeks ago before the new year that during your trip to England, you were going to take a lot of time to ponder, a little quiet time for Mr. Riley, to ponder the future of the party and future ideas and goals. I'm curious what you came up with along those lines.
Well, why don't we hold that thought?
Yeah.
And come back and
look at
talk
that.
About it.
That's a tease.
Yeah, 43 past the hour. We're here with Dan Pashman, Mark Riley. We'll talk to you in a second.
Who are these people? Morning Sedition.
On record, it's out. It's no secret anymore.
Morning Sedition from Air America Radio.
Welcome back. It's 48 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America. We have Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman of New Jersey, in the room talking about the lack of a need to move to the center. The center does not exist, and it cannot hold, according to Yates. And let's hear before we get into what Pashman has put to Riley to basically explain what the Democratic Party needs. Let's hear the good Reverend James Forbes from the Riverside Church in Harlem on the idea of liberalism.
We better go into our values. And I don't mean two values.
Mm-hmm.
I mean the broad values upon which this nation was built. And that includes care for those who can't care for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It means productivity based on regulations that are fair for all of the people. It is based on a global vision that we are the global leaders. What is our vision for the globe? And how do we manifest that in our own nation? And we're going to be discussing how do religious values stop destroying folks and actually build up community and get us ready for the mission that is ahead.
That was the Reverend James Forbes from the Riverside Church in Harlem. I said James Forbes.
Yes. You did that well, by the way.
So lay it out, Riley.
Okay.
Address young Pashman's request.
All right. Here you go. First of all, Simon Rosenberg is absolutely right in terms of having to shore up the Latino and the black communities. Even though the black community went four square for John Kerry, the Democratic Party must redefine its relationship with these two groups. Now, the flip side of that is that the Democrats were successful in 1992 due in part to the fact that they took a couple of issues, not a whole bunch, but a couple of issues and stole them right out from under the Republicans' nose. And the reason why they were able to do that was in part because their chair of the DNC at the time was Ron Brown, an African-American.
Mm.
And if you're going to articulate, for example, the idea of ending welfare as we know it, which Bill Clinton did in 1992, the way you do that is to have a black guy stand there with you going, yeah, that's right.
That was Ron Brown.
That was Ron Brown.
Okay.
Ron All right, Brown. The last successful DNC chair, okay?
Yeah.
And at a point, you have to start, actually, he wasn't the last successful one. He actually left, became Commerce Secretary, and the DNC chair that succeeded him was successful in 96.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line here is the Democrats are going to have to look to the constituencies that they have up until now taken for granted. There were, and this is an instructive little bit of history. There was a point during the early stages of Kerry's campaign, after it was obvious he had sold the nomination, he met with some, you know, with some black supporters, in fact. And actually, it wasn't him. It was one of his aides. And one of his aides said something that was very telling. He said, well, you guys are part of the base. You're on board, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
You can't take that for granted anymore.
Yeah.
George W. Bush got 44% of the Latino vote because Democrats took for granted that Latinos would vote Democrat.
And through terror and exploitation of wedge issues, he's managed to take some of the working class people who will now vote against their economic interests if they're frightened enough. So
yeah,
there's a lot of the base that, that they have lost because of these reasons.
And you have to go after, you cannot be afraid. Harold Ickes is 100% right about this. You cannot be afraid to go after character issues. Go after the Republicans on character issues and hit them, both not as hard as they hit you, before they hit you.
Riley, I agree with you on that, and I agree that Democrats need to do a better job of reaching out to Hispanics and the black voters, absolutely. But see, I get trepidatious when I hear you talking about how, well, back in 92, we took a few Republican issues and made them our own, stole them out from right underneath them. That, to me, I think is the danger right now, because right now it's different from 1992, and that did work in 92, you're right. But I think the problem is that because that worked in 92, all these centrist Democrats now are saying, well, it worked back then. It's the only thing that's worked in the last 4 years.
The centrist Democrats don't have a clue what issue to choose. Yeah. I have an issue to choose already.
Okay.
All right.
Go on.
I'm not going to tell you.
But but also, it seems that most people don't agree with the centrist stance on things.
Exactly, exactly.
And that I don't know what they're basing this on. If they're basing just sort of pandering to the Beltway or pandering to corporate interests, then those centrist values are that. If they're determining their decision on that, then yes. But if they're determining their decisions on what the people, the masses of people think, Democrats think, then they're misguided.
Absolutely. And my problem with what Riley is saying is that the fact is that the two both political parties since 1992 have both moved significantly to the right since 92. The American public has not moved nearly as much as the two parties have moved. The Republican Party is now an extremist party, in my opinion.
Yes.
Okay, the Democratic Party is the party that represents most Americans in terms of the issues.
Here's the difference, Dan. In 1992, Democrats had a problem with welfare, and the Democratic Party knew it. They knew that even if Democrats were not down with eliminating welfare as we know it, which is what Clinton ended up articulating, the fact was that a lot of rank-and-file Democrats had a problem with the way the system worked. And Democrats stole the idea from the Republicans. The Republicans wanted to, at some point, eliminate it, okay? But the Democrats took the idea and said, you know what? We can reform this, we can make it work better, and we can cut the rolls, all of which took place, you see? And what I'm saying is there are issues out here that you can take and say, and I'm not talking about the Social Security and stuff like that, which I think is an inviolate issue.
Mm-hmm.
Privatizing Social Security is, to me, a pathway to disaster, which means ending Social Security, because I think that's their endgame. You don't compromise on those issues. But there are certain other issues that you can take, you can make your own. And in my judgment, the one person that can head the party that can do that is Wellington Webb.
Really?
Wellington
yep.
Webb.
Wellington Webb.
There you go.
That's right.
All right. There's a surprise. See what you did? Now we got some real information out of Riley.
Wow. We forced him to commit at least.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you haven't, because I haven't told you what the idea is yet. And
yeah.
I'm not going
to. We're going to squeeze that out of you.
We're going to have to wait for that one. Dan Tashman, thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Good to see you. Now get
always,
out.
It's always good to have you in from the other room.
Yeah.
I don't mind the trip.
Well, let's go over some of this stuff that, you know, I was reading David Sirota's piece in The Nation. And he talks about the Democratic Leadership Council and what they claim and what is the truth of the matter in terms of what people think on economic policy. The DLC and the press claim Democrats who attack President Bush and the Republicans for siding with the super wealthy are waging class warfare, which they claim will hurt Democrats at the ballot box. Yet almost every major poll shows Americans already essentially believe Republicans are waging a class war on behalf of the rich. They are simply waiting for a national party to give voice to the issue. And this is a nice piece that he wrote, if you want to go check it out. You know, he talks about, their stance on corporations. He talks about the centrist belief about taxes, about health care. I'll be hitting some more of that as we move through the show.
You know, it's interesting because Bush, in his interview with the Wall Street Journal, gets into the whole issue of corporations and whether or not corporations as victims. It's an amazing concept.
Well, he sees them as victims.
Yeah, he does.
I mean, you know, he's incapable of having empathy for people in any real way, which is clear by his behavior. But corporations, he feels very bad for.
Yeah. Maybe he thinks the corporations are actually some human, there's some human dimension to them.
He doesn't want them to suffer. Well, there's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Let's get these marching orders out for today, Tuesday. 1, show up at scenes of California mudslides, perform Hopi ceremony to heal the earth. 2, we've got get fired 60 Minutes employees rehired by producing documentation to show their innocence. Make some up if you have to. 3, make sure none of the drum skins in your drum circle are made from actual animal products. Pleather is really the way to go. Pleather. 4, make Armstrong Williams an offer. We know he can be bought. 5, quarter of the day, just drop it in the conversation. I want my Social Security paid in canned food and bottled water, man. I won't need money down my bunker, buddy. Wake up, sheeple. The show's almost over. Wake up.
No, it isn't. We still got 2 hours, though.
Oh, do we?
I don't know.
All right, I'll hang out.
But you know what's coming up?
You going to hang out?
I'm going to hang out, we're going to listen to our listeners confess.
Oh.
All right, the Liberal Confessional coming up next hour. And, of course, we've got later on in the show Art Spiegelman.
Oh, great.
Pulitzer Prize-winning cartoonist, all for you here on Air America Radio.
And you're listening to Air America Radio at 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Blah, 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 blah.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, and of course, all you self-appointed leaders of the collective we. Do you hear some buzzing? I hear some buzzing in my head. Do I have a... Is that... What? Ha! Woohoo! All right. So, listen, I just want to say a big morning sedition farewell once again to Karen in Boston and her nursery school class. Thank you for all the emails. You know,
you're a hard man.
Yeah, well, yesterday I made a decision to talk about myself on the air. I talked about I was having a little difficulty. What do you got, Kayla? We're trying to find the buzz?
Oh, yeah,
Is that coming off on the air, the buzz? Is it?
Relax.
Oh, I'm okay. I'm gonna relax. So, So I chose to talk a little bit about my personal life.
Yes.
As you know, Mark Rowley, I talked about my wife being in Los Angeles and how difficult it is sometimes for us to communicate properly. And, you know, it was an honest conversation.
It certainly was.
Yeah. And then I get, of course, a series of emails of people, very supportive people. I got some sweet emails really offering some help, and it was great. People called too. A lot of people called, and it's just the way it should be. You know, I mean, it's what radio
is. It is what it is.
You know, because this show, a lot of people misunderstand sometimes. We're doing a morning show. We're doing a show that has range. It has a variety of things. We can talk about anything, and that's what we do here. So I get a letter. Dude, this is a political show, not an advice to the lovelorn column. You don't hear Rush Limbaugh whining about his drug addiction or divorce. Now, here's a point I want to take some umbrage with. Would that be the right word?
Certainly.
It's like, I wish that guy would talk about it. I wish he would offer that part of himself. I find that very engaging. The other stuff I can't stand. All right, so she says, no, you don't hear him talking about it. You don't hear him whining about the lack of morals. You hear him whining about the lack of morals in the liberal citizens of this country. Please, stick to politics. We're sad that you have marital issues, but you need every precious moment to stir up the troops, like the Repugs do. Quit wasting precious time. And here in parentheses, plus, we're not really interested. Karen from Boston. Ooh. So I wrote back, what is it with you people, what is it with people like you and the word we're? I'll have you know, not only did we get dozens of phone calls about the little relationship problem, but dozens of emails. Yours was actually the only snotty, condescending, hurtful, negative one. It's our show, and there is room for all topics that we decide to cover. Thanks for your input and your assumed position of spokesperson for the collective we. You know, and then it's just like, bam. I open up some sort of Pandora's box of insanity. She writes back, whoa, touchy. The collective we are the 20 or so of us who used to listen to you in the morning here at work. Now that we know that you can't take a joke, I didn't see a joke there. We're taking the relationship thing more seriously and realizing that, yes, you are wasting airtime, and I'm wasting more right now, Karen. Good morning. On personal issues. Our democracy is at stake. The other team is winning for reasons like this. For my problems with my wife living far away, that's why they're winning?
Well, that's a little bit of a
stretch. You can't take a joke. You belittle your listeners now, excellence, and waste their time on personal matters that might be interesting if there you didn't take yourself so seriously. Oh, really, Karen? That's a very jumbled sentence, all that stuff. You know, you convolute your original argument. Well, whatever. This is not important. But she says... Oh, this was great. Like using the end of the show to complain that there's too much coverage of the tsunami disaster, which is not anything like we did. Would you have complained about too much coverage of 9/11 if you'd been on the air then? Had nothing to do with what we were talking about. We were talking to Jeff Jarvis, a media consultant, a media critic, about whether, you know, how much do you go on with the tsunami coverage at, you know, when you're not paying attention to the war in Iraq, to Social Security issues. I mean, at what point does it become gratuitous?
We were asking the question. We were not making the statement. We were not saying, oh, it's gone too far. We were saying to Jeff Jarvis, do you think in your capacity as a media critic that maybe there will be a point that it goes too far?
So now she just says, oh, but not to worry. We are only 20-some. We're happy to defer to the dozens of people who called and weren't dumped on in return. You know, what does that even mean? She dumps on the show, and then it's just hilarious.
She's too deep for me.
In the meantime, we'll be happy to go back to listening to PBS in the morning. And when we come back, hopefully we'll get that noise fixed, and we'll tell you what's on PBS. And Karen and her, I assumed, co-workers were going to be enjoying this morning as opposed to listening to Morning Sedition. We'll be back. It's 11 past the hour on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition.
We are the highest rated, most respected news show in America.
On Air America Radio.
Fifteen past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning Sedition. We're in the middle of a big Morning Sedition farewell to Karen and her 21 co-workers. I thought they were co-workers. I'm going to do the Dream Diary here in just a second, but it turns out that she said she was going to be listening to PBS in the morning. And then I went and got the schedule for PBS up there on GBH this morning. You have Barney and Friends at 6. At 7, you have Clifford the Big Red Dog.
He's on now.
Yeah. Oh, can we get it on in here? What, you know, at 7:30, we have Arthur. And 8 o'clock, Dragon Tales. And 8:30, Sesame Street. So I'm sure that Karen and I thought were co-workers and apparently just a room full of children will be enjoying that. And I just want to say to Karen that our show's not really for children anyway, so you're doing the right thing here. You really are. And I appreciate your input. And have a good day. And thanks for listening. Right now, my therapist told me to do my dreams and write them down. So here we go. What day is today? Tuesday. I got Tuesday.
Tuesday.
All right. I'm at the Capitol because I'm a new congressman. It's the first day of the session. I'm smiling, pressing the flesh, trying to make a good impression. Just then, a 6-foot-5-inch tall girl in a weird white swan mask and a long white gloves taps me on the shoulder and says, Mr. Maron, it is time. I follow her through a door that says supplies and down a long, deep spiral staircase lit by torches. I walk into a dark, cavernous room that smells like gym socks. In the middle is a glowing pool full of pure, melted gold. Around the pool, all the members of Congress are standing in a circle wearing red Nixon masks with plaid schoolgirl skirts. They started chanting, meat, 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 meat. The swan lady tells me to put on a white smock and a baby mask and kneel before the pool. Tom DeLay steps forward wearing an eagle mask and feathered chaps. He spreads his arms and says, silence! Today you join the Congress of the United States of America. Prepare to consecrate the bonds of fellowship, Pledge Marin. Two members hold me down and paper cut both my forearms with the Constitution until my blood drips into the melted gold. They all begin to chant, blood money, blood money, blood money, blood money. Then DeLay grabs the back of my hair and says, made in the money pledge, Marin. Let it nourish you and sustain you. Die to your former self and be reborn as one of us. Then he dunked me into the golden blood bath. While I was under, I could feel all scruples leaving my body, all empathy and logic dissolving as the delicious gold washed me clean. I came up gasping to hear the sound of applause ringing through the cavern. Welcome, Brother Marin, DeLay bellowed. After two supermodels toweled me off, I squeezed into my very own plaid schoolgirl skirt and red Nixon mask. DeLay gave me the secret handshake and a briefcase filled with stacks of brand new 50s. He smiled and said, from now on, your name is Freedom Falcon. Now go and represent the will of the people. I woke up and my bed was filled with the interest-bearing T-bills.
Ooh. That 6'5" woman,
yes,
with the swan mask? I may have had that dream myself once.
Get it, get it. Oh, we're going to Rileytown, but we didn't.
No, I wasn't. Yeah. No, no.
It wasn't quite.
No.
It almost was. So let's get into something. And there's a couple of stories that I found were kind of interesting. Did you read that the KKK story?
Yeah.
I had it right in front of me, but now, here we go. The court won't block KKK from highway cleaning. You know those things where it says adopt a highway, those signs that say adopt a highway, you know, like Joe's Hamburgers adopt a highway, Macy's adopts a highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now it's okay for the KKK to adopt a chunk of the highway in Missouri for cleanup. This is something that states do to defer some of the costs of highway cleanup to local businesses and whatnot, and it gets them part of the sign. They do some good work. I just think that if you're going to let the KKK be on the sign anytime they're cleaning the highway, they got to wear the get-up.
Yeah, right? I mean, well, you know what this is, though? This is supposedly all they do is kick in the money.
Okay.
And the public works people end up cleaning up.
Oh, so they don't even have to go out and do it?
No, they don't have to do it. But see, what's amazing to me is now, the Klan are a bunch of murderers.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
So who's next? This part of the highway is paid for by Al-Qaeda?
Right.
What's going on here?
Well, they generally have prisoners cleaning up.
Yeah, they do have generals.
So
yeah,
sure,
they do.
Murdering people has always been part of the prerequisite for cleanup. Usually those are prisoners. Now they're having murdering people who are out, you know, not in jail.
Not in jail. And see, the amazing thing to me is, you know, you're talking now less than a week after a bunch of Klan guys were indicted and finally arrested and getting ready to be brought to trial in Mississippi.
Yes.
Over the murder of three civil rights workers, and now you got their name on a highway?
Yeah, what is this? What is this country about? What statute? How does that work? Is that a constitutional freedom? Are they just some sort of men's club?
Yeah,
why don't they just put the organized crime families up on those things?
Yeah, this is paid. This stretch of highway cleaning paid for by the Gottis. I'm sure they got the money.
I mean, you could do Gotti construction, but I don't understand how the KKK can just have their name on a highway sign and have it legitimized. But I guess when they marched in Skokie, the idea is they're not the same Klan that murdered
those
people.
They always say that they're not.
This is the
Klan.
New Klan.
They're a bunch of idiots.
Yes.
Racist idiots.
Always have been.
Always will be.
Now, here we go. Let's talk about Michael Newdow is going to go up against the big boys again.
Yeah.
This is the guy that he's an emergency room doctor from San Francisco, an atheist. He was the cat who challenged the words under God and the Pledge of Allegiance, asserting they amount to a religious expression and violate the Establishment Clause in the First Amendment. This challenge was on behalf of his daughter, who was a student at a public school where the pledge is recited daily. The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in 2002 ruled in his favor. The school district, with support from Bush, with the Bush administration, challenged the ruling before the Supreme Court. The child's mother, Sandra Banning, joined the school district's challenge. She claimed that Newdow was only partial custody over the child. Newdow Banning never married and lived separately. So they basically, they threw this thing out on a technicality. Like that, apparently Scalia couldn't even argue with the guy. The guy had a point.
Well, Scalia recused himself, didn't he? I think he had to recuse himself because he went public, I think, in a speech saying how vehemently he disagreed with the original ruling from the Ninth Circuit.
Well, now, Newdow, who has got some seriously large cojones,
yes,
I might add, is going up against him again to try to stop the prayer, the inauguration prayer said at President Bush's inauguration.
Yeah.
And I wonder if I don't know if he's going to get any traction on this, but the truth of the matter is, it's important to have a guy out there doing this. It's important to have a guy out there making these type of stands. You know, more people should do it, and more people do it. But these are pretty high profile. I just like the fact that he's saying you can't have a Christian prayer on the inauguration of the president.
Yeah. Now, last year, that same Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals actually threw out that same lawsuit, saying that Michael Newdow didn't suffer a sufficiently concrete and specific injury. But you never know with the Ninth Circuit, which is why, by the way, George W. Bush wants to divide the Ninth Circuit into, I believe, three separate circuits and confine the Ninth Circuit only to California. It's an amazing thing because he thinks they're too liberal.
So what would confining it just to California do?
Keep the liberalism at bay so it doesn't infect Arizona like it does now. I mean, that's essentially what he's trying to do, because right now the Ninth Circuit includes, I believe, a piece of Arizona and a piece of at least one other state. And what they want to do is kind of separate them all out so that the people of Arizona are not polluted by California liberalism.
Oh, well, that's ridiculous.
Ain't that wonderful?
Do you think he's going to have any success in doing that?
Yeah. He's got a mandate, damn it.
I want to put this out there now because we're going to be taking calls in the next segment after the break in a couple minutes for the Liberal Confessional, which has proven to be a very popular bit of business. This is where you, as a liberal, can confess your deep, dark liberal transgressions, your sins. Your secret slippings. It's 866-303-2270 is the number. 866-303-2270. We're going to do the Liberal Confessional on the other side of this break, and I just wanted to put that number out there to prepare you cats you can get one together. You can dig within your soul now.
Think long, think hard.
And we were talking before about debunking centrism.
Yes.
David Sirota has written a piece in The Nation I think is very helpful in our conversation we're having about the Democratic National Committee chairs, is that, you know, he's gone, you know, sort of point for point on why, you know, centrism is not valid. And I already covered one of the points, and I want to move into health care, where we are led to believe that it is a liberal, left, or socialist position to support a single-payer system that would provide universal coverage to all Americans. But if you believe the Washington Post, that would mean America was some sort of hippie commune. The newspaper's 2003 national poll found that almost two-thirds of Americans say they prefer a universal health care system that's run by the government and financed by the taxpayers as opposed to the current private for-profit system. And that's the same thing with prescription drugs. You know, on energy policy, those who want government to mandate higher fuel efficiency in cars are labeled lefties, even though a 2004 Consumers Union poll found that 81% of Americans support the policy. Corporate apologists claim this extremist policy would hurt Democrats in places like Michigan, where the automobile manufacturers employ thousands, but the Sierra Club's 2004 polling finds more than three-quarters of Michigan voters support it, including 84% of the state's auto workers.
Yeah.
So people are waking up, yet there's an insistence on behalf of obviously Republicans and people and Democrats moving more to what they call the center, that these people don't have a voice and that, you know, sympathy and the corporate ideologies of the running, you know, that are running the country or what's more important.
Well, see, Mark, the sad part of this is that in some instances you have Republicans running toward the Democrats. Here you've got a hue and cry after a Republican congressman is removed as chair of the Veterans Affairs Committee. Why aren't the Democrats all up in the face of the Republican leadership saying, why did you dump this guy? The reason why they dumped him, by the way, this is Robert Smith from New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
The reason why they dumped him is because he has been a relentless advocate for better benefits for veterans. That's a great issue for the Democrats to climb on and say, hey, you know what? This guy does need to be chair of the committee. There are other issues. Lindsey Graham and the rest of these people are opposing Bush on restricting victims' rights, opposing Bush on Social Security. Make your common cause with people who are fighting the same battle you are and be effective that way.
And especially if they're in the other camp.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know, it's just
suborn
like
them.
Yeah, right. Find the open door and let's get on these things. I can't believe that. I guess it's because they're all still scrambling. I mean, it would seem to me that there should be some cohesion around those issues you mentioned. And in Tennessee, there was the issue of the Medicare cuts.
Of Medicare cuts, yes. And by the way, a Democratic governor is making those cuts. He's going to cut 323,000 people. adults.
There's something satisfying about something bad happening, when bad things happen into red states.
But let me tell you something. This is getting ready to happen to states all over the country.
Yeah.
Yeah. In order to finance this war, in order to do all this stuff, he has got to cut money.
Mm-hmm.
Guess where he's cutting? Medicaid, yeah. Medicare.
He's cutting it where, people need the most help. That's where he's cutting it. So we'll be back with the Liberal Confessional.
That's right. Have you thought of your sins? Call us, 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Join the Morning Sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Fast the Hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Man, what a day. What a Tuesday.
It is.
You know, sometimes it's not it's not easy being a liberal, Mark. We all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time, but when we need to unburden ourselves, we can always confess our liberal sins. If you want to take a turn in the liberal confessional, give us a call at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. But right now it's my turn. Bless me, Brother Riley, for I have sinned.
Tell me, Brother Mark, how can I ease your
burden?
Well,
I need to talk to you about Clinton.
Hallelujah! Amen! All praise, Brother Bill Clinton.
That's the thing. I've really had it with him.
Really?
Yeah.
What seems to be the problem, Brother Blasphemy? I mean, Mark?
Well, it's the same old story. Once again, he's entered into a dark, shameful, and inexcusable relationship that he can't seem to keep private.
You mean like Monica Lewinsky?
No, I mean like George W. Bush. Lately, he can't seem to keep his paws off him.
Lord have his mercy.
He's all buddy-buddy with him all the time these days. He says nice things about Bush every chance he gets. I mean, Clinton has always had a problem with compulsive behavior, but this is way out of control, brother.
So, my son, I guess the fact that Brother Bill advocates bipartisanship in the name of a higher cause, in this case, helping the tsunami victims, is enough to make you turn your back on the man who led us through the longest period of sustained peace and prosperity in our nation's history.
Well, I mean, if you're going to put it that way.
And I guess the fact that Brother Bill has always fought against everything President Bush stands for is not enough to dissuade you from harshly judging him for saying a few nice things about the current president.
All right, okay, I know. Okay.
But I guess if the tendency of progressive liberals like you to tear down people on your side whenever they say or do something you don't agree with results in 10 or 12 more presidential election defeats, it's no big deal, right?
All right, okay, man. All right, Brother Riley, you properly chastised me. Made your point, and thank you for not mentioning that I myself was praising Bush only last week.
Actually, I was just about to get to that. In fact, as your penance, I would like you to once again say something nice about Bush right here, right now.
No, I can't. Do I have to?
Yeah.
All right, so let's see. Okay, we got the good thing about Bush. Okay, let's see. The war, no. I can't think of anything there. The economy, I got an idea. No. Right, wait, you know what, Brother Riley?
Yes?
I could say some nice things about Bush, but if you don't mind, I'd like to privatize my praise for the president.
Never mind, my son. We'll leave the diplomatic politicking to someone who's good at it, like Brother Bill. Now go forth and sin no more.
Amen. You know, Riley, I thank you for not making me do penance, but a confessional is no fun without penance, so if anyone else out there wants to confess and seek absolution in our liberal confessional, you can give us a call right now at 866-303-2270, 866-303-2270. Mitch, please, what is your sin, Mitch?
Hello?
Hello, Mitch. What is your sin that you'd like to confess today?
When our twins were born in March of 2002, we sent a letter. There's one of them now. We sent a letter to President Bush asking for advice on raising twins. We got back a letter on letterhead with a felt-tip pen signature, and now we're considering hanging the letter on the wall in their room.
All right, wait, whoa. So you guys are, I'm assuming, not of the Republican ilk.
No, we are yellow dogs.
Okay, so you've written I'm assuming you did this with a sense of humor, right?
We wanted something on letterhead. We wanted something on White House letterhead.
But it was an ironic thing. You were doing it. It's a joke, right?
Yes, but now thinking about hanging it on the wall, every time I change a diaper, I got to see this guy's signature.
Well, what did he say in the letter?
That we should transmit our values. And, actually, it's been in an envelope for about the past year, so I don't even know anymore.
It sounds like that one of them is already angry about it back there.
Yeah. And, yeah. And here's your penance, just in case you might be looking for one, Mitch. Lose the envelope.
Look, here's what you got to do. You can put it in a frame. You can hang it on the wall. But you got to find the stupidest picture of the chimp president, the blow monkey, AWOL puppet of the neocon death cult, and stick it right in the corner so everyone knows the ironic distance you're taking from that. And just so the kid will understand. So then they'll associate the signature and the letterhead with something silly for the entire course of his childhood.
Yeah, either that or you ever play darts, Mitch?
Yeah. I've been known to lose a game of cricket or two.
Oh, there you go.
Wow, cricket. That's
cricket. Nah, man, because he knows that they show darts on British TV. He knows.
Oh, okay, that's a dark end.
Yeah,
I'm an idiot. Thanks for calling, Mitch.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks a lot. Cricket is a dark game as well?
No, it's all British.
Okay.
It's an Anglophile thing.
Okay.
Man. And you know you hate Anglophiles.
Well, no, I hate the British. I hate Anglophiles. Anglophiles, I feel sorry for.
Oh,
British,
there you go.
I, of course, am joking. We have a lot of people.
Oh, no, you're not.
No, I am.
Ginger!
Oh, I dislike specific British people. here we go. Steve, listening in Madison.
Mic.
What's your confession, buddy?
Hey, how you doing, fellas?
Okay.
Hey, I'd just like to submit before I get to my confession, which is loathsome, by the way, that our friend Mitch there.
Yeah.
I don't think he deserves penance. I don't think that letter came from the president. If it had, that signature would be in crayon. You know? And to reflect the man we're talking about, if it were a black crayon, that crayon would be in the back of the box.
See that? Steve, you are piling on here.
Yes, I am. But look, this is an actual dream of mine, and I actually committed it to paper because it was that awful.
Oh.
I dreamt I had sexual relations with Ann Coulter.
Wow.
Yeah.
And did she talk during it? What was?
Oh God, no. What happened was I was delivering sandwiches in my dream to the Fox headquarters.
Yeah.
And now I'm just reading this off of my little scrawl here, and there was nothing between the slices of white bread. And except for like the souls of those who surrendered those souls to believing the crap they spew it from that building, you
know?
It was kind of like some kind of spiritual Soylent Green. That's what I've written. Here.
Spiritual Soylent Green. That's good.
And we went to dinner.
Yeah.
She refused the bratwurst.
Oh.
She refused anything in a phallic shape. Okay.
Okay.
And
except obviously what you had to offer.
Well, I guess so, but it gets horrible, my friend. Her hair was sitting on her shoulder like a blonde parrot. You know how she's always got it preciously arranged and it never moved?
Right.
And, well, that was scary.
So it was just sitting on her shoulder?
Yeah. Well, you know, it kept saying some things because, you know, it struck me odd in the dream that she, you know, she parrots all these vile talking points, yet the parrot is sitting on her shoulder like this blonde wig, you know?
Oh, pretty
good. There's no bird there.
Pretty good.
But you know, we had to go back to her place because she couldn't be seen, you know, in my neighborhood.
Sure.
And we went there. She refused any kind of sexual advance except I had to service her, you see.
Yes.
And I went downtown.
Yes.
You know, and my tongue stuck. It was so cold.
Yeah, that, we're renaming that Steve Town.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent. It stuck, just like in the Christmas story, just like it's frozen metal. She had to call the fire department.
Oh, my God.
In the dream.
Hey, wait a minute, man. My daughter listens to this show.
Oh, my God. So not only did you have a dream that you had sexual relations, but you were literally stuck.
Yes, because she's so cold, you see. And then she had to call the fire department, and the irony was that, you know, the jaws of life had to extract me, and yet my jaws were begging for life, you see.
Oh, man.
And the fire department came. There were no black fire department
members
when they came, and she called them all heroes. I was sent to Guantanamo Bay.
Wow.
Okay, and I got a new ID, but you know I'll never forget that taste because every bit of gruel I ate at Guantanamo Bay tasted just like Ann Coulter.
Oh my God! Well, listen.
You know what?
But I must want her. I must want her. You see?
Yeah, you're gonna have to own those feelings, and I'm not sure what his penance is. I think he might have to.
Don't send me back to my dreamscape, man.
Just a guardrail? I don't know. I mean, I think this is a difficult one.
I think you're just gonna have to abstain from sex for at least a month.
And no, I got no problem with that.
And then, you know, try to actively, you know, get this out of your head. I think you might have to actually fantasize about Ann Coulter for a couple of weeks just until you nauseate yourself out of this subliminal fantasy.
Or why don't you try a
stream of wheat with maggots in it?
All right, buddy. Thanks for calling, Steve. Steve.
Yeah.
You take care. That was Steve, right? Yeah.
That was Steve.
That was some heavy business.
That was a whole lot of Steve.
See, we went down a Riley mineshaft. We didn't. That wasn't just Riley Town, man. We were.
I've never gone that far.
All right, we're going to do another one before the break here.
Sure.
All right, Jan, listening in Madison. What is your confession?
My confession is, I'm a cab driver.
Okay.
And I'm a flaming liberal.
Yes.
Cab driver. And I gave this Republican thing a ride. and he spent most of the ride telling me how much money he makes,
uh-huh,
and how he's taking his wife to Europe for their honeymoon, and how much he hates liberals,
ooh,
and how much they've destroyed this country. And I didn't say anything to him, which is unusual, because usually I say, walk.
Yeah.
And
do you? Really?
Yes, I
do.
Great. I say, hit the pavement.
Oh, yeah.
And I also accepted money from him as a tip.
Oh, my God.
And I need absolution, because this is just gnawing at me.
Well, I not only will I give you absolution, but I have a suggestion. Next time you get someone in the car like that and you can't find it within yourself to get them out of the car, either, you know, one, you know, pick up a hitchhiker, okay?
That's what I do for a living.
But somebody who clearly doesn't even need a ride but looks really dangerous, or, you know, maybe somebody like a Republican would go, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
And you say, I'm helping, okay? And then,
yeah.
Or else just, you know, wherever he wants to go, just drop him off at a shelter. All right, so Jan, that's your absolution.
There you go.
Thanks for sharing.
Okay, and I want to add one thing.
Okay.
If that guy that called before me gets in my taxi, I'm going to wipe him down first. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jan.
Thank you, Jan.
You take care. So we'll take a couple more after the break. Is that the deal, Jonathan?
Yeah, let's do this.
Okay, because why not? We got
some truckers holding on to it.
Okay, good. So we're still taking confessions. 866-303-2270. It's very enjoyable hearing you guys speak your secrets. It's 45 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Join the morning sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. The number is 866-303-2270. We're in the middle of a very deep and very powerful liberal confessional segment. Let's take a call from Alice in Massachusetts. Good morning, Alice.
What's your confession? Well, the sad thing is, and it's something our mutual ancestor died for, that I'm the 15th cousin of George Bush.
Oh, my God.
Mm.
It's a genetic sin.
Yeah, they came over on the Mayflower, John Tilly did, and then he died within 3 months, as did his wife, our 16th grandmother, for freedom, and we're busy throwing those freedoms away, and who's the man in charge? Their 15th grandson, George Bush, to whom I'm unfortunately related.
Well, there's only one thing to do, and that's to try to embezzle money from George Bush and give it to people who are in need of it.
Well, I write him daily, you know, dear cousin George, and for some reason he never answers.
Do you really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I do, really. Oh, you know, you can read some of these diatribes. Anyhow, we're on two AM stations here in Boston, and I want you to send one of them to Birmingham, Alabama, because they're identical. We don't need two identical stations here in Boston. What we do need is a mission station in Birmingham, where my friends and relatives who are also liberal.
Are they Bush relatives as well?
No.
Okay.
Well, I guess my relatives are, but my friends, they need this lifeline. I have to send them quotes from y'all, because we don't have a mission in Birmingham. The Unitarians opened up a mission in Birmingham, and that's why I'm a Unitarian. And I got some salvation that way.
Okay.
But y'all need to do the same thing for those who still have a brain and compassion in Birmingham, Alabama.
Okay, I'm writing this down. Get Birmingham
Station. Get Birmingham affiliate. We'll put John Fenton right on that.
He's I appreciate that.
And yeah, you know, keep trying to get him to get, keep trying to get him to pay attention to you. You know, Alice, I'd love to see some of these or some of these letters or hear some of them. If you want to record some, stay on the line. I want to have our producer, you know, take your money, your number.
Maybe we could talk
about you recording a couple. Okay.
Oh, that'd be great.
Okay, thanks a lot, Alice.
All right, we'll put her on hold.
That'd be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
The rageful letters of George Bush's 15th cousin.
Dear cousin George.
I've died to hear some of those. Okay, here we go. Irvin, driving somewhere in Michigan. Good morning.
Hi, Irvin.
Irvin. I guess he took off.
Yeah, maybe he lost the signal.
Pat, I believe, is driving somewhere in Alabama. Pat?
Yes, hi, good morning.
What's your confession, Pat?
Well, first of all, it's going to be kind of hard to follow that guy and Ann Coulter.
I know. There's plenty of people that want that to be behind us.
Yes.
Oh, my God. You think that was true? Well, I don't care.
Anyway. It was definitely food for thought.
Yeah, really.
Well, you know, it's kind of like those letters that people used to write in the Playboy. You know half of them. It couldn't be true.
Yeah.
Anyway,
you know what, Pat? The point where he said that her hair was sitting on her shoulder like a parrot, that can only happen in a dream, I think.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, maybe you're right.
It's a little weird.
The other thing is, I sure hope everything works up between you and your wife, and I think that Alice lady was just a poo-poo head.
Yeah, no, you mean that Karen. Karen, yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
she's being a little mean.
Yeah, she was being really mean. Yeah. Anyway, like I told whoever answered the phone, real nice guy, I'm a truck driver, so I couldn't say where I was. I was just somewhere in Alabama.
So you're driving right now?
Yeah.
How's it? Is it nice? The sun's coming up?
I'm sorry?
Is the sun coming up right now?
Just again and two, but it's still kind of early here. It's
That's so fun to be out on the road when the sun's coming up.
Yeah, I get to listen to y'all every morning, so that's kind of
we're glad. We thank you.
But anyway, my confession is I'm still, even though I used to work for Walmart, and I shouldn't say that name, but anyway, then.
You can say it, yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm still shocked in there, even though I know better, but they let truckers pull in there. You know, they're about the only place where we can buy groceries. And that's, I mean, you know.
You can pull the big rig into the parking lot then.
Yeah, because some of the other places won't let us. And they will. And, you know.
So that's one of the reasons why a lot of people shop there is just it's so convenient, it's cheap, they got everything. And that's how they get people. But I imagine that do you balance it out with stopping at sort of regional, local sort of truck stop groceries that are privately owned?
It really shafts you. Really bad, yeah. Well, it's not groceries, but you can't take the rig in and the things we carry. We can't stop most of the time. It's only when we're empty that we can stop if we've got the rig. And Walmart lets us park. And most people think truck drivers are kind of below worms. And so we're not allowed to go most places, even though, honestly, we go to school. We actually have an education. We can chew bubble gum and walk and everything.
But you can also drive a huge truck.
Hey,
Pat, can you do us a favor, Pat?
Yeah.
Can we hear you honk your horn?
Oh, my God, yeah. And I actually voted for Gary.
And
one other thing you mentioned about hating. Honey, I hate that administration that's in there now.
Yeah.
And I hate the war. And I hate all that stuff. So maybe that's the second sin. You got to tell me about both of these things. I need absolution for both of these things.
Well, you know, it sounds like your heart is certainly in the right place.
Yeah, you don't need any absolution for hating the war. I hate all war too.
And you got a tough job in terms of things being convenient. I mean, I wish you could stop work shopping there and give more business to locally owned businesses when you can. But you know, Pat, you sound like a great person, so I wouldn't feel too guilty. You know, just try to balance it out a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, I will because I go to places when I'm home.
Okay.
South Carolina, Charleston, come see us.
Okay. Thanks a lot,
Pat. All right, we get you on 7:30 a.m. now.
Oh, okay, great.
In Charleston. Fantastic.
Yeah, in Charleston, South Carolina. All right, love you. Y'all take care and be good, all right?
Okay, all right, Pat. Thank you.
Take care. Wow.
Gee, Hunter Horn. Gee, Hunter Horn.
There you go.
That's so funny. Don't you remember sitting in the back of the school bus? Just Yeah, I felt bad. You know, that's how Walmart gets people. It's like they actually make it convenient for people
who are driving a big rig to be able to park.
And the problem is that those truck stops, those small cities that are truck stops that are privately owned, you know, jack up the prices too high for them to feel good about shopping there. It's a complete conveniency.
You know, I almost wanted to shop at Walmart the other day because I couldn't find any shower sandals anywhere. But I did find them finally someplace else.
You couldn't find shower sandals?
Nobody had them. They make them think that, you know, like it's beachwear or something. It's very strange.
Wow.
Nobody had them.
You're strange, right?
Well, thank you. I'm always spoken highly of you. When we come back, Art Spiegelman, a funny guy, a relevant guy, a Pulitzer Prize winning cartoonist, joins us when we return here on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Blah, 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 blah.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, and self-appointed leaders of the collective we. Good morning to you. I can't let it go. I can't let it go. And it's not that important, Mark Riley.
Well, I don't know. I mean, does it rank right up there with servicing Ann Coulter? I don't know.
That was crazy.
that was a real deep dream.
That guy's dream was nuts.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, here, first of all, let's do it this way this hour. You know, I know there's like four or five people that listen for all 3 hours, and they've got to entertain this stuff, you know, over and over again, because I do this stuff at the top of the hour. Sometimes I repeat it, because that's the way I say hello.
That's right.
Why am I sing-songy? What is wrong with me now? Well, here, yesterday I was talking a little bit about, not so much a relationship problem, but just that, you know, some strain in having a bi-coastal relationship. And I was, you know, I was a little upset yesterday morning, so I figured I'd be candid with Mark Riley and my crew here, with Clutch Larson and P.W. McDonald.
With your bros.
And Kalo and Dan Passman, Sonny Lewis and Linda Passman, Kent the Colonel. And, you know, and I was on the air and I was talking about it because it sort of ruined my morning. And this is some of the stuff we do on this radio show. And, you know, I'll tell you, I got to be honest with you. People reached out. This guy, he wrote to me. Man, it was so nice. This woman, Phyllis, it is. This is about long distance relationships. This is my sister and her husband of 40 some years, spent several years living apart for professional reasons. She was getting her PhD in Kentucky while he was working in Indiana. Not a bi-coastal relationship, but not an easy one either. They say that this kind of relationship can work if you follow a couple of important rules. And she made this whole list of rules. Very sweet. You know, one, budget for a trip to see one another at least once a month, twice is better, but at least once for more than one night. Yes, check. Two, speak to each other at least once a day, more if you can. Check. Try 20 times. Three, five. Try every 5 minutes. What are you doing? Where you at? What's going on? How's my life look over there? Do I still... How the cat? Who are you with? Three, find something you can do together long distance. My sister and her husband found a TV show. They both watched, taped it, then watched part of it together on the phone, of course. That's kind of sweet. You know, we'll sit on the computer with each other, which gets a little annoying. If you're
what?
If you're both doing it, it's cool. But if she's just doing it, and if you... Can you ever talk to somebody who's doing something who's on the computer? I'm like, hey, baby, what's going on? She's like,
okay, now I understand. Yeah, you know, that can be irritating.
Yeah, I'm like, I love you. She's like, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, right. You're just like, what's going on? Send each other sexy letters, full-fledged graphic, if that works for the two of you. That I don't do, and I should do it. I should do it more often. I remember when I was courting my wife, is that what you said? Did I just say that?
Courting? You came a-courting.
Yeah, I did. I wrote her poems.
Really?
Yeah, I did.
Whoa, does she still have them?
I think something got lost in the computer. But, yeah, I used to do the poetry thing in college.
Wasn't one of those, there was a young man from Nantucket type.
The Riley poem. So my Here, my sister says she's sorry she didn't have a webcam, even though they didn't have haven't been invented this time, because having live face-to-face conversation, even via webcam, helps lots when a person travels on business. That's a great. Someone else suggested that. Well, anyways, this is just one of many letters that, you know, that people were very nice and supportive of Pat, who called us. And then I get this one yesterday, and like, I'm weird with email, and I've festered about this stuff before, you know. But you know, this wasn't just a negative email. There are people that seem that they think they have ownership of what this show is, or also just sort of like they don't realize how nasty they are. So I get this email from Karen in Boston. Dude, this is a political show, not advice, an advice to the lovelorn column. You don't hear Rush Limbaugh whining about his drug addiction or divorce. No, you hear him whining about the lack of morals in the liberal citizens of this country. Please stick to the politics. We're sad that you have marital issues, but you need every precious moment to stir up the troops like the Repugs do. Quit wasting precious time. And in parentheses, plus, we're weird. Not really interested.
What's right? A Repug?
You know, Republicans. Okay. Karen from Boston. So, you know, and it was just the tone, dude. It was just the tone. First of all, you know, this is not only a political show. This is a show that covers a lot of different things.
Well, and that was our first mistake.
As regular listeners know. So yeah. I wrote back, was it with people like you and the word weir? I'll have you know, not only did we get dozens of phone calls about the little relationship problem, but dozens of emails. Yours was actually the only snotty, condescending, hurtful, negative one. It's our show, and there's room for all topics that we decide to cover. Thanks for your input and your assumed position of spokesperson for the collective we. And then this is what I get back. Just like this one's all jangled up. I love this. I love when control freaks unravel. Here we go. Wow, touchy. The collective we are the 20 or so of us who used to listen to you in the morning here at work. Now that we know that you can't take a joke, we're taking the relationship thing more seriously and realizing that, yes, you are wasting airtime on personal issues. Our democracy is at stake. Then I guess that's on us, Riley.
Yeah.
Democracy is at stake. The other team is winning for reasons like this, because of my relationship problems and my desire to talk about them as a person. And I'm adding that. I'm interjecting. I'll try and change my tone when I interject. You can't take a joke. You can't deliver one. That was me, not the letter. Belittle your listeners, now ex-listeners, and waste airtime on personal matters that might be interesting if you didn't take yourself so seriously. We think we might have solved your marital problem. I take myself too seriously. I didn't have a problem. There was no marital problem, just a long-distance relationship issue. But that's okay. And took the issues more seriously, like using the end of a show to complain that there's too much coverage of the tsunami disaster. Would you have complained about too much coverage of 9/11 if you'd been on the air then? Well, I guess that, you know, what you consider coverage is just, you know, milking people's pain and tragedy to keep people like you watching television. What we were commenting on is how much is it deterring from the real issues of the world, Karen in Boston. Ah, but not to worry. We are only 20 people. We're happy to defer to the dozens of people who called and weren't dumped on in return. You dumped first, lady. In the meantime, we'll also be happy to go back to listening to PBS in the morning.
Oh, by the way, I guess that means the entire first email was a joke. Is that what she was trying to say?
She's just backpedaling. She didn't think anyone responded. So this is my last one to her. Great. Well, thanks for listening. Maybe we'll address our little exchange here on the air. It's always good to get listener feedback out there, especially the self-righteous who think they can just blast emails out into the dark and not get a reaction. By all means, as far as democracy is concerned, tsunami round the clock for as long as possible is much more important than Iraq, Social Security, victims' rights. As long as your heart and mind are in the right place, you are truly enlightened. Thanks again for listening as long as you did. It's good to know there are people out there willing to jump ship immediately because they disagree with something that happened for 20 minutes. Those are exactly the type of people that make a political party hum. That's what I wrote back because I had nothing better to do but engage with this crap. So anyways, they're watching PBS, her and her 20 co-workers, and that's a TV station.
PBS. TV network.
Yeah, it's a TV network, and I guess you know that's what they prefer. But this morning on PBS, 6 o'clock, Barney and Friends. Great. 7 o'clock, Clifford the Big Red Dog.
I missed that.
7:30, Arthur. 8 o'clock, Dragon Tales. And 8:30, Sesame Street. So I guess that's a full menu for you politically minded people. And that's certainly in the name of democracy. So I guess it was my misassumption that you and your coworkers were listening. I guess it's you and a bunch of preschool kids who you've dragged.
She runs a daycare center.
I guess, but I don't think this show's right for them anyway, so she's doing the right thing. I appreciate you taking that action and protecting those kids from knowing about stuff that they don't really need to know about yet and letting them watch their shows. That's big of you, Karen. Thank you for your email. Great talking to you.
Right again, please.
Yeah. I, you know, but again, let's do a couple of plugs that we haven't done all day. If you want to, well, is it still, we can still oppose Alberto Gonzalez. Contact
us. Why not?
And learn more about veterans opposing Gonzalez by going to the links page on morningsedition.com. Refuse to surrender your freedom. Sign the ACLU's pledge by going to the links page on morningsedition.com. I will be performing up in Boston, Karen. If you want to come up, I'll be at Jimmy Tingle's Off-Broadway Theater in Davis Square, Somerville, Massachusetts, on Friday and Saturday, January 21st and 22nd. Why don't you bring the kids down? If you want to help the victims of the tsunami in Asia, go to the links page on morningsedition.com to see what you can do. And that's about that for that. Looking forward to our guest coming up in just a minute, Mark Reilly.
Yeah, yeah, Art Spiegelman.
Art Spiegelman is a wizard of the cartoonist pen and ink.
Yeah.
And also a very deep, funny guy, very political guy, and a quick mind, and a hero of mine. So I'm looking forward to talking to him. He'll be back, and we'll have more stuff after this. It's 15 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Ask your doctor if Morning Sedition is right for you. Then listen anyway. Mark Maron and Mark Reilly on Air America Radio.
Past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Reilly.
See? I told you couldn't pronounce black names.
Reilly on Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Ramon brought this in. He was wearing a dress earlier, and he dropped this off, and I don't know what. I can't even begin to do. Since Bill Clinton has become surprisingly chummy with George W. Bush, Ramon decided to download Clinton's Palm Pilot, so here's Clinton's Palm Pilot for today. 8 a.m., wake up. Prepare for a day with W. Note, use Arkansas voice, not Oxford voice. 10 a.m., play video golf with W. Swap avoid the war stories. 11 a.m., watch some hoops with the Dubster. Gently rib him if he starts trying to eat pretzels. Talk him into a South Beach diet. 8 p.m., dinner with the Bushes at the White House. Note, excuse myself to go to the bathroom. Check again to see if I cleaned out my secret porn cubbyhole. Art Spiegelman's just looking at me like, no, not yet, nothing. 9 p.m., listen sympathetically as W once again tells me that a mean boss Dick Cheney is. Note, don't bore him with tsunami relief chatter. 10 p.m., go home, take a long, scalding hot shower. Why am I showering at night? I'm totally fine with this. With us in the studio, of course, his new book is a graphic novel memoir memoir. It's called In the Shadow of No Towers, which I have. It's a nice large coffee table book. Very pretty book it is, Art. He's also won a Pulitzer Prize for the second installment of his memoir, Mouse, a graphic novel representation of his father's experience in Auschwitz during the Holocaust. He also co-founded the comic and graphics magazines Raw. You can see him on the back of back page of the New Yorker today if you want with his piece called Oi, We Got Them Inauguration Day Blues Again. Art Spiegelman, good morning.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for having me.
How you doing?
Quite an intro.
Yeah, is it over now? Like, it's up our airtime.
It's all right. I get accused of using airtime for worse reasons. Believe me. So what you've been? I haven't talked to you since the election. Before we were leading up to the election, but you were pretty pessimistic then, as I recall.
I was. Although I cheered up for the 48 hours leading into it, I just bought into all of the punditry and went, "Oh, we're winning."
Yeah. You know?
And then, like, ever since whatever it was, like 1 a.m. of that November somber night, you know, I've just been bummed out.
Yeah, and did you go away?
I was on this book tour that was more like a series of stump speeches, political actions, than like promoting a book per se.
Oh, really?
Like going to campuses and talking to people. And
now, do you draw a good draw? You get a good crowd?
Yeah, I do, except I don't seem to meet any Republicans, no matter what state I go to, which is what makes me think this is all some kind of science fiction plot, you know, like pretending that there are Republicans out there, where there's only about 8, you know.
Able to vote like 40 million or like 10 million apiece.
Yeah, and all of their ancestors get to vote, too.
Absolutely.
So, on the other hand, like, I was in all these red states, but I kept meeting fellow Americans.
Now, when you bring kids, like when college kids come up to you, do they have you sign mouths? Do they know your work?
Comics have become rock and roll on campus.
It's true, right?
Yeah.
I just bought our producer, Clutch Larson. I brought him Chris Ware's giant book, The Quimby the Mouse thing.
Oh, yeah.
Are you a fan of that guy?
I love Chris's work. In fact, I think I was probably the first person to publish him when we were doing Raw.
Is that true?
Yeah, he was a A shy kid. Now he's a shy 30-plus-year-old. But he's in college, and I got to see his stuff because somebody sent me an article about my work from a college newspaper from Austin.
Yeah.
And the article sucked, but on the back, there was a little piece of a comic strip by Chris. I'm like, this guy's good for Raw. So I called up to get his address, and he certainly knew Raw, but he didn't think he was ready for prime time, so he took a lot of coaxing to get him to give us something.
Well, he's a very meticulous guy, and I think you shared that quality. I'm looking at the back page of the New Yorker right now, and it's amazing about your work is that you draw from all different styles of art and photography and history, and it's hard to pinpoint your style, per se.
Yeah, I think of style as something, for myself at least, as if it was like a corporate trademark, and I don't have one.
That's good. You can do anything.
Well, I can't do anything, but the result is that I'll do anything, you know, like, because I can't. So basically it's a matter of, like, finding what visuals feel appropriate for the matter at hand. Like, that No Towers book is just sort of, looking back on it, it's a collage of about 15 different artists, or mainly the work of one very schizophrenic artist.
You know? Yeah. In that book, you have some actual strips, old strips, like antique strips.
Yeah, the second half of the book was all, I thought of the book as these two towers, like, the first one was my experiences the morning of September 11th and the what I've come to call the hijacking of the hijacking that took place shortly thereafter, reducing the event to a war recruiting poster. And then I didn't intend to make a book, and when I was making it into a book, my idea was I have to have a happy ending, and there's no happy endings in the 21st century, so I'm going to climb back to the beginning of the 20th and start over. And I began to find the old comics that were made just for that day's news cycle and meant to disappear that still were vibrating and beautiful the way art is supposed to be.
Yeah.
So I found pages that seemed to reflect on the contemporary moment from a moment 100 years earlier.
Oh, that's wild. Vibrating as art is supposed to be. That's pretty good. That's exactly what art does. It vibrates. That's how you know if something has artistic integrity on some level.
It's got to be built to last. It's got to keep vibrating inside your head after you've read it. And a lot of this stuff, like I said, it was just made to be fish wrapped after. But it's still, you look at those little Nemo Sunday pages from 1906, and, man, they're as good as anything any of the so-called high artists were making around them.
Sure.
You're rough with this Janis Joplin riff you have here on the back of the New York.
Oh, you're dating yourself. Janis Joplin is old, but not nearly as old as Lee Morris and Billie Holiday, who did that song earlier.
Yeah. Wow. So it's based on a blues song, an actual blues song.
It's based on Mood Indigo, the Ellington song, you know. So the lyrics just seemed like the only thing I can do since that election is just sing the blues.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you a question about the power of graphic art to actually elevate the political debate. I think it's one of the few forms that really does it. Because I remember my whole being was informed by underground comics, as they were called when I was a kid, and it hit me to a lot of things that I didn't know about. And I think that comics have an ability to blow minds, unlike most things.
Well, everything has the ability to blow minds. I can find lots of comics that can't. Like, I don't think my mind has ever been blown by Garfield except as a way of, like, portraying American stupor.
So wait, Art, didn't you have the stick on Garfield in the back of the car?
I think I ran into the car that had that. But I don't know. But comics can, you know, because they get to move, like, directly into your brain past a lot of defenses, because it's like little bursts of language and little iconic pictures and all that. What's amazing to me...
Like hieroglyphics.
Yeah, somehow. Yeah. But the main thing for me is just, like, it's amazing, because as the world... Can you say...
Probably not.
Okay. As the world turns to crap,
that's better.
comics seem to be flourishing like never before, and I don't know if there's a causal relation or not.
We'll try and figure it out when we come back.
Mark Spiegelman is here, and so are you. This is Air America Radio.
On Air America Radio.
Past the hour, I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yes, it is.
You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Edition. We're sitting here with Art Spiegelman. We're going to take a call here. Since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So now on the phone once again is Planet Push correspondent Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. God's got out a spray can, and he's tagging the wall of sin.
Okay, great.
Bring it all over.
All right. Lawton, today we're going to talk about the Bush administration's use of so-called journalist Armstrong Williams as a shill for their education policy.
Well, Mark, I would think that you, as a member of the media, would be applauding such a practice.
What are you talking about?
A lot of politicians give lip service to supporting independent journalism,
but only
the Bush administration's willing to pay good money for it.
I don't know
cold
about that.
Cash.
I
don't... The free market is never wrong.
I don't know about that.
Never wrong.
Excuse me, but Bush used our tax dollars to pay off Williams.
Oh,
all right?
Let me guess. I suppose you'd rather see your taxes go to other things, graphic novelists maybe, or underground cartoonists. You get that money.
How about feeding the hungry people, maybe getting them clothing? How about that?
Well, that's ridiculous. Armstrong Williams doesn't need to be clothed just now.
No.
He makes a perfectly good will. He just lives down the block from me. The man dresses impeccably. I should be clothed and fed that way.
Yeah. Thanks to our money, he's a well-paid street tranny, a whore who struts around dressed in journalist clothing, my friend.
English, Mark, please. Not polite to confuse your guests by using foreign phrases. If anything, we should praise the Bush administration for being so careful with our taxpayer money.
What are you talking about, Lawton?
Well, okay, in the past, presidential administrations try to pay off the journalists who disagreed with them. But Carl, the architect, drove innovation was to pay off a journalist who already totally agreed with Bush on everything.
Well, that way
he knew what he's getting paid for. You don't buy a pig in a poke.
All right.
He understands that. Listen, everyone's always whining about their tax money being wasted. Well, this is an example that put a precise and specific use that helps everybody.
Wait a minute. Lawton, I hope you don't get mad at me for asking this, but I'm curious. Would you be a Bush shill for $250,000?
I certainly would not.
Wow. Good. See, good for you then. Good. Oh, no. What happened?
I did it for $100. I did a softball interview with Jared Hughes on the PAX Network for measly $100. I didn't know there was hundreds of thousands of dollars to be made.
Yeah.
I took the first offer they gave me. Mouth open, brain closed. Mama raised a fool.
All right. Hold on, buddy. It's okay. Look, we all make business mistakes. Take it easy.
A new agent. I have inadequate representation.
All right. Don't we all? Yes, Lawton, don't we all? Take it easy, buddy, please. Okay, just pull it together. I hate feeling sorry. There you go. All right.
$100.
All right.
Those ain't euros neither. That's legal tender. Greenback dollars. That's what makes the world go around.
All right. Thank you,
Lawton.
All right. Thank you, Lawton.
God loves you. Deal with it.
I'll try.
All right. Wow. I would think he'd want euros about now. They're worth more than greenbacks.
Well, that's interesting. You spend some time in Europe. Your wife was born in Europe.
Yeah.
And do you have a place over there?
Yeah.
Now it seems to me that there's a couple of I know a comic. I know that Crumb is in Europe. Do you guys all hang out over there?
Or? Yeah. Actually, I see Crumb every year.
Oh, yeah?
Really?
And Gilbert Shelton, the guy who did the Furry Freak Brothers, is...
Oh, really? He's there, too?
...happily enfolded in Paris. Yeah.
So is there a little...
Well, there's a lot of cartoons. I mean, I'm hanging out with a lot of Italian cartoonists who have emigrated from Italy because it's not as pleasant an environment as... You can still smoke in France.
Sure.
But
don't you?
It's required, yeah.
Have they banned smoking in the rest of Europe?
No, in Italy. They just got to it in Italy today.
Really?
Yeah, the Italians are really miffed.
It seems like, especially with Italy and France, that the cigarette is like a permanent detachment.
Yeah, they graft them in at the age of 12. It's sort of a confirmation ceremony, you know. But in Italy, they passed this law that just went into effect yesterday, and everybody's grumbling and talking about rebelling, but I'm sure they'll kowtow the same way the Irish did, you know, which I didn't believe was possible. You can't imagine going to a pub and not smelling smoke.
It's still hard for me to deal with in New York, but
right.
And I don't smoke anymore. But I, you know, I mean, I work in clubs, and just the idea that I don't walk out of a club, you know, smelling like cigarettes and stuff. There's part of me that's sort of nostalgic about that. I don't mind smoking. I miss cigarettes.
It's definitely a fuel for good conversation. Like I find that hanging out in a cafe in Paris is still a genuine pleasure, even if I didn't smoke. And the idea that I can actually smoke and talk at the same time and not be like confined under house arrest in my studio to do it is amazing.
You're making me a little itchy now. I feel the Jones coming back.
But like in Paris, it's coming even to Paris. There's beginning to be, you know, mumbling about, like, curtailing smoking, which was part of my conversation with the French, because they're very happy with me. My No Towers book went over a lot easier in Europe than it did here.
Like, sure.
In France, it was just sort of embraced. I was just seen as an underweight Michael Moore or something, you know. But,
right.
But in America, although it sold very well, there's a lot of controversy about the takes in the Shadow of No Towers. But in France, where they're very
like
proud of it.
Specifically. I mean, like, that's,
yeah.
Well, that's
oh, geez. I mean, I'd have to, like, pull out all the reviews, but there were, like, really
I mean,
angry and nasty reviews. I didn't have the right attitude towards September 11th because I didn't get real sanctimonious about all of the dead as if I didn't care about it as an event. You know,
right.
I was just using it as an excuse for a polemic rather than the actuality, which is I was horrified by the event and then saw the event being dragged into becoming a political...
But isn't it interesting that personal reflections that, you know, you were being honest about your feelings and your artwork, and they criticize you for not towing the party line of what they thought you should be feeling along with the country.
Yeah, you know, instead of, like, talking about, like, the poor firemen who lost their lives, I was
right.
just, like, totally narcissistically engaged in my
yeah.
own private... life in the Shadow of No Towers.
Which some people were.
And that private life ended up, like, being interrupted in its grieving by the shenanigans of Giuliani and
sure.
Bush and beyond. So I was forced into becoming a kind of political cartoonist, even though it's not my predisposition.
Yeah, what would you call your predisposition on the cartoon?
Narcissism.
I got a question for Art.
Yeah.
I got a question about the creative process.
Mm-hmm.
Which comes first, the artwork or the dialogue?
Well, for me, usually the writing comes first, but it's not always that way. Like in that new page that I just showed you, there's one image that made the rest of the page happen.
In the New Yorker.
The yeah. Arc. Yeah, the back page of the New Yorker. The first panel is a picture of Uncle Sam wearing a crucifix, which I was just doodling in my notebook. And then at some point I drew right next to him myself in a T-shirt that says, I'm with Stupid. You know? And that was like just a single image. It wasn't like a comic strip person.
Now, you were in your studio when you
of
did
course,
that? Or were you
yeah,
on the
yeah.
train or what?
Oh, I don't remember because it's all one work life.
Of course
basically.
They love you in Europe.
I got a free pass. I get to go back. They'll pay me $200,000 a page to bash Bush. It's all under the table. It's perfect.
But look, wow. right here in the center of the page, you have an ark, like Noah's Ark,
yes.
Only it's for people now. Like, see, that's it's got a sepia flavor to it. It's got a sepia tone to it. It's got some sort of glorious kind of a shot here. Now, when you do something like that in the midst of what is not a standard comic strip, but certainly a different style in the other panels, I mean, what are you drawing from there? I mean,
there, I'm literally drawing with a paste pot from a Gustave Doré Bible illustration of Noah's Ark.
What's a paste pot?
Oh, you know, just paste it in.
You know, oh, really? You just cut it out?
It's just clip and paste. That panel was the easiest one I had.
Here I'm sitting here thinking, like, wow.
Man, that's a lot of lines.
Spiegelman's really done it. No,
but
not
I didn't credit.
Bulk,
I, to be fair, unlike Williams is trying to, like, keep his collaborators out of the spot.
Oh, yeah, it says right there.
You know, it's like me and Gustave Doré did that page.
Yeah, 1866. I'm sure he's very happy.
I'm sending him his part of the show.
Okay.
So we were talking a little bit that we didn't get. Maybe can we take, let's take a couple of calls for Art after the break, 866-303-2270, because I know the last time that you were on, there were some cartoon fans that were like, wow, it's Spiegelman. So if you're out there, 866-303-2270. And then, again, when we come back, we'll try to get back to, you know, trying to figure out why comics have so much impact now and why they're more mm-hmm. popular now and what is the sort of key to their power. It's 43 past the hour. We're talking to Art Spiegelman.
Morning Sedition. We can't do it without you. Call us at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. Right here on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, we're going to land this thing. It's Mark Maron. It's Mark Riley.
Hi.
Art Spiegelman is
Hi.
Hanging out.
Hi.
How you doing? Now, we got a call on the line, a surprise call from, you might know him. I'll give you a taste.
Professor, what's the grade?
The grade is F.
One of Bush's professors at Harvard Business School in 1973 taught Bush's required first-year economics course. Bush also told him that... He admitted to me, Professor Tsurumi said that he admitted to me that to avoid the Vietnam draft, he had his dad, he said, the dad's friends skip him through the long waiting list to get him into the Texas National Guard. He thought that was a smart thing to do. Now he's on the phone with us. He calls here occasionally. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
Good morning.
Hey, Professor.
So
Hi.
What's on your mind, Professor Tsurumi?
Well, three things. First, the
I'd like to endorse you the point that, the American media is only being preoccupied with the tsunami.
Yes.
Now they can pronounce my name Tsurumi because of tsunami. That sounds a good thing that happened to me.
Okay.
But the, well, that it's the, as a result, as you know, that the Iraq and many other real issues that have been disappearing from the media coverage.
Yeah, we talked about that yesterday.
Yeah, I know you did. And the, so I thought it was a very good point. I want you to keep hammering out. For example, all right, tsunami so far, I guess, got killed anywhere from 150 to 200,000 people.
Yeah.
Those are the number of Iraqis Americans have killed already.
Yes, sir.
Millions.
Yes, that's true.
And American, United States, you and I, taxpayers, are spending about $1.5 to $2 billion a week.
Yeah.
So when U.S. pledges, they haven't paid yet. Only pledges.
Yes.
350. That's minuscule.
Yes.
And compared with Sweden or even Japan on a per capita basis, that's minuscule.
Okay, what's the next point, Professor?
The next point is the Social Security.
Yeah.
The point you are hammering out. Many misconceptions about the Social Security are being exploited by Bush administration.
Mm-hmm.
Social Security is an insurance policy, not an individual investment account.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's the difference? Well, it's an insurance policy, so like a life insurance, auto insurance.
Yeah.
You once you participate in it, even if, you know, then if you have a coverage, you get paid when an accident happens or you die.
Yeah.
Regardless of how much you have paid in.
Right.
That's the insurance scheme.
Yeah.
And this Social Security is the most efficient and successful government plan and program.
Yeah, we're going to talk to Paul Krugman tomorrow.
Okay, that's he should be able to do that. But and I tried to teach that to Bush at the Harvard Business School, and obviously he didn't get that message.
So what grade did he get?
Well, C anyway.
Thank you very much, Professor. We got to move along. I appreciate your call. It's
thanks, Professor.
To talk to you. We're back with, you know, I love that he calls us, and I, you know, he's got to come back. He's got to come into the studio sometime. And
he sent us a letter, too, I think.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
Let's take a call for Art Spiegelman. Annie in New Jersey. How are you, Annie?
Hey, Annie.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Just wanted to say, Mr. Spiegelman, I really love your art. It's made a real difference in my life, and I love the fact that you take the discussion to a different level, a more visceral level, and it's more comprehensible for a lot of people. I'm a knit designer. I'm a knit teacher, and I teach all over the place, and I, no matter what reaction people have to your comics, I find that it makes them have a reaction. You know, they just can't be Walmartized, sanitized, non-thinking, go along with it. It makes them at least think, and I think it's a brilliant thing to get people to open the dialogue. You know, all of your work, I really enjoy it very much.
Thank you. I know that, like, comics are getting used in schools a lot more often, because at least it looks like reading.
Yeah.
Thank you for your call, Annie.
Thanks, Annie.
Well, that's interesting about, like, you know, what you were saying is that, you know, when you have a dialogue of narcissism, which I have as well, and I think, you know, Crumb, I think, shares that with you, too, is that you're constantly seeing everything in relation to you. So there's a constant dialogue of funneling through you between, like, that, just looking at that, looking at this, look at that. And it is a really, I think, a very honest, it's a very provocative way to do comics.
Well, the advantage to it is at least you know where somebody's coming from.
Yeah.
You know, like when somebody's like this guy Williams you were talking about earlier in the hour, like he's not letting you know where he's coming from. So
right.
The result is it's this phony objectivity that is part of that allows dialogues to take place in public like torture, pro and con, you know, because you've got to present both sides of that issue.
Yeah.
And it's more realistic to like indicate where you're coming from, saying, yes, I'm a sadist. And I love the idea of like draping prisoners in Israeli flags or whatever they're doing now.
Right. There's an honesty to it. I agree with that. Let's talk to Joseph in Michigan. Joseph.
Hi, Joseph.
Good morning.
Yeah.
It's a cliche question, but I'm dying to ask Mr. Spiegelman, what advice would you offer to the aspiring graphic novelist?
There you go. Thank you for your
advice. Thanks for the call.
I would say work very fast, because right now there's a bandwagon and every publisher is jumping on it. By next year, the wheels will have snapped off this particular bandwagon.
What, the graphic novel?
Yeah, it's all. I mean, every publisher is coming out with comics now, and in the delusion, because the only books that are really selling these days in bookstores are so-called graphic novels and religious books, you know, so If you can come up with a graphic novel about religion in the next 3 months, you've got a publisher. But I guess my main advice has always been, like, keep your day job, because it's one of those things where comics is not an easy way to eke out a living. It's us flukes that have managed it.
I got
to
be honest with you. I have learned, like I said before, I learned a lot from that guy who wrote about Bosnia, the graphic novel.
Oh, Joe Sacco. He's brilliant.
He's great. Yeah. I mean, I didn't know about, I had no real sense of the history of what went on in that region, and from reading Safe Zone,
Safe Zone Garage Dive.
From reading that, it just blew my mind. I mean, it was an effective way for me to learn.
He's the only comics artist I know that has a journalism degree. So, like, he's very scrupulous as he runs around and does this. And the only problem is, one of the reasons you can't make a living as a graphic novelist is it's such slow, tedious work. You know, you got to draw everything over and over again. And so the result is he's a journalist, and he's doing stuff about the occupied territories and former Yugoslavia, and I think he's just came back from Africa and is working on something about that. But you're so slow that you can't deal with the daily news cycle. Mm-hmm. So you've got to, like, come out with your news report about 2 years or 3 years late at a minimum.
Right.
And so you've got to, like, really sink your teeth into what you're reporting on. You know,
right.
Like, and it gives it a kind of urgency. You know, like, when you get your news report about Yugoslavia from a video camera that functions like a vacuum cleaner, sucking this stuff in and then spewing it out, nobody ever has to look at it except maybe the video editor before putting the news clip out. Every building is witnessed,
right?
And like that, witnessing itself is an important part of his reportage,
right? And because it is in that graphic form, it'll never get old. It'll never get, like, even though it's reporting, which you're saying, I think on some level is disposable. This stuff is going
it makes
to,
it not disposable.
Exactly.
Says, like, this is like our particular example of man's inhumanity to man right now, and that's going to remain true,
right? So now, quickly, you know, we got a minute. What do you think is accounting for this tremendous, you know, wave of popularity?
I've been trying to figure it out. It's possible that it's just like this McLuhan-esque thing where, like, when a medium stops being a mass medium, then it's got to reinvent itself as art or die. And now we're watching comics reinvent themselves, get themselves into museum shows, libraries, bookstores in a big way, get commented on and reviewed in the press that used to reserve its space for literary novels and so on. And I think that that's partially just a seismic shift. Part of it may be just that, you know, I've heard it said that in the fast culture where people get their information visually, people are just trained to be able to suck in information the way comics offers it. I don't
know. Wow. You know, Art, thanks for coming. Thanks for talking to us.
Gave us a lot to think about.
We're going to have Stephanie McLuhan.
I'm sorry.
Marshall McLuhan's daughter is going to be on tomorrow.
Really?
Yeah, she put together a book with a lot of his lectures and writings and interviews to sort of redefine his legacy.
Oh my God, between that and Paul Krugman, I'll have to set the alarm and get up early.
There
tomorrow.
You go.
All right, again, thank you, Art Spiegelman. Here's our liberal agenda for today from the Streisand compound. One, show up at scenes of California mudslides. Perform Hopi ceremony to heal the earth. Okay. Yeah. One, two, get fired 60 Minutes employees rehired by producing documentation to show their innocence. Make some up if you have to. Three, make sure none of the drum skins in your drum circle are made from actual animal products. Four, make Armstrong Williams an offer. We know he can be bought. Five, the quote of the day, just drop it in a conversation. I want my Social Security paid in canned food and bottled water, man. I won't need money down in my bunker, man. Wake up, sheeple. The show's almost over.
The show is almost over. But you know what? We're coming back tomorrow. We're going to talk about Social Security tomorrow with somebody who knows. Paul Krugman from the New York Times and Stephanie McLuhan, daughter of Marshall McLuhan, joins us as well. Have a great day. Thanks, Art.
See you, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
This is Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.